Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of our Thursday evening Dhamma class at Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey, from August 10, 2017. My Dhamma talk and our Sangha discussion is on the Akanka Sutta. In this sutta, the Buddha teaches that if one wishes to be truly compassionate, they will develop a Dhamma. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace. So, as in all the Buddha's teachings, all his suttas, they were always taught in context of dependent origination and Four Noble Truths. The reason why I say that is if you take a sutta out of context, it's hard to really understand how to apply it appropriately. And within the context of dependent origination and Four Noble Truths, everything the Buddha taught was to develop understanding of those four truths. That's the foundation of everything he taught. The first noble truth that states that dukkha occurs. Dukkha means every type of disturbance in the mind, from minor annoyance to extreme emotional and physical suffering, and every type of disappointment and unsatisfactory experience in between. And then he says that the second noble truth, that desire originates that process, and clinging continues that process, clinging to what we feel will fulfill those needs. The third noble truth is that cessation of that process is possible, and that points to impermanence. And the fourth noble truth is that the Eightfold Path is a path for developing the cessation of dukkha. The Buddha awakened to the profound understanding that it is ignorance of those four truths that leads to suffering. It's called dependent origination. And both of those teachings have been wildly misinterpreted and misapplied over the last 2,600 years. But they're simple and basic teachings. And the reason why I say this is just as an introduction to what the Buddha teaches here. And he taught this sutta to the assembled Sangha, to the Sangha that the Buddha lived with day after day. So they had a thorough understanding of the foundational teachings of the Buddha. The Buddha teaches that the Eightfold Path carries responsibilities of behavior and Dhamma practice, Buddha's words. If your wish is to be held dear by your Sangha, to be respected and inspiring to them, listen directly to my words. If your wish is that the gifts you receive be of benefit for all, then listen closely to my words. If your wish is that the thoughts of you bring benefit to all, listen closely to my words. If your wish is to be free of ever-changing conditions of emotional and physical upset, listen closely to my words. If your wish is to overcome disappointment, worry, and fear, meaning dukkha, listen closely to my words. Notice the Buddha is not talking about any type of wishing towards material gain. If your wish is to attain unwavering mindfulness and pleasant abiding moment by moment, listen closely to my words. If your wish is to attain the end of deluded thinking and distraction, listen closely to my words. Friends, remain free of taking life. Remain free of taking what is not offered. Remain free of sexual misconduct. Remain free of hurtful speech. Remain free of intoxicating substances, and bring these precepts to perfection. Those are the five basic precepts for Dhamma practice, remember. Friends, commit to develop tranquility. Be mindful of meditative absorption. That points to the jhanas, to the four levels of meditative absorption. And useful insight, that last line, is probably one of the most important lines the Buddha ever spoke, because it teaches that the quest for insight could itself be a distraction. If we're trying to gain insight into everything that seems to be arising in our minds or that our minds are alighting on, it's just going to be continued distraction. And that's very common in a lot of modern practices, to sit down quietly and anything that comes up, we start getting analytical about it and calling that analysis of what's arising insight. The Buddha taught that useful insight is insight into the three marks of existence, of impermanence, the not-self-characteristic, and dukkha. And that's what he's referring there, in useful insight. Meditate often and with consistency, meaning consistency of method. Train yourself in this manner and be mindful of even the slightest deviation. And that's another common problem in modern Buddhist practice that was just as common during the Buddhist time, where you wouldn't be addressing it. There was a lot of license taken in what we would call Dhamma practice, because it's often reaffirmed that it's all one thing, all spiritual practice is all one thing, it all leads to the same place. And the Buddha recognized that during his time, and it's just as common during our time. The reason why the Buddha taught an Eightfold Path is to overcome that need to reconcile everything as a Dhamma practice and to remain focused within that framework of the Eightfold Path, or else he wouldn't have taught it. Let me read that again, and then I'll comment from the article. Train yourself in this manner and be mindful of the slightest deviation. These are my words now. That's the end of the sutta. This is another brief sutta from the Pali Canon that, if understood and developed, will bring lasting peace and happiness. As is typical of the Buddha's teachings, he does not teach the manipulation of personal or societal conditions, as these conditions are all rooted in impermanence. He teaches to immediately abandon any behavior that would contribute to other suffering. He does not teach to embrace suffering or to observe suffering. This overemphasis on one aspect of the three marks of existence is a misapplication of mindfulness and does not develop understanding of the underlying confusing and unsatisfactory nature of life, meaning just to stay focused within the Dhamma. The Buddha teaches to penetrate to the cause of suffering, ignorance of Four Noble Truths, that results in craving and clinging in an impermanent environment. The Buddha consistently taught the Dhamma always in the context of Four Noble Truths. In this short sutta, the Buddha teaches the importance of developing moral and ethical behavior through the Eightfold Paths. The reason why I mention that, moral behavior is often substituted as the path. In other words, if we can act in altruistic ways, if we can act loving and kind to all human beings, that's enough of a Dhamma practice. And the Buddha recognized that upon his awakening, when he referred to himself prior to his awakening as an unawakened bodhisattva. Bodhisattva means a person who has great compassion for other human beings. And that's the common path in modern Buddhism, the bodhisattva path. That's part of the Mahayana school. That's substituted for the Arahant path, meaning the path towards awakening. And the reason why that's important is the Buddha recognized that prior to his awakening, he was compassionate towards all human beings. He had great compassion, but he was lacking wisdom of Four Noble Truths. And in his awakening experience in the Nagara Sutta, he describes that, how he got stuck in this feedback loop of compassion for all human beings, but still stuck in ego-based desires too, that were constantly creating conflict for himself, constantly creating stress or dukkha for himself. And it wasn't until he could break through and get past that self-referential feedback loop that he was able to see that process clearly. So altruistic, compassionate behavior is an expression of an awakened human being rather than only an aspiration. Of course, we should hold these ideals out for ourselves so we can recognize that we still have a little bit of a ways to go yet on the path. The reason why the Buddha taught the Eightfold Path and those moral and ethical factors of right speech, right action, and right livelihood are to act as a framework for when we're outside of those behaviors. We recognize that we're still stuck in self-referential views. We're still craving for things and still clinging to those ideals. So when we have altruistic desires or wishes for all of humanity, the way to fulfill that wish with the Buddha's teaching is to develop the Eightfold Path. It's one of the reasons why I say in most classes, the most loving thing that I can do for myself and for all of humanity is to take to the Dhamma and awaken. Because then I know that my thoughts, my words, and my deeds are framed and informed by true wisdom, by the Eightfold Path, rather than something that might be clouded by a view of how I wish things would be, rather than seeing things clearly. So that's the end of tonight's talk. Any questions on this on the talk? And then we'll go around the room. Okay. Kevin, good to see you tonight.
Good to see you, John. Really appreciate this talk. I think with a lot of sort of the outside distractions going on in the world, whether they're in our own community or our own life or our own world, it's really great to be pointed back to the practice. And, you know, like you said, it's the right effort and the inside job kind of thing. So it's just very nourishing to have the Sangha and your teaching. So thank you.
Thank you. I'm glad you're here tonight. The worldly conditions during the Buddha's time were very, very similar to our time. There was a lot of strife, a lot of aggression, you know. Little kingdoms were always at war with each other. There really wasn't much difference. The only real difference was there wasn't a global understanding of what was going on. But the Buddha was exposed to that, and he teaches this. And there were people concerned about the aggression of other people and little, these little nation states against others, just like what's going on today. The immediacy of annihilation wasn't there, obviously. But there was still just as much strife and stress. And the Buddha taught, the reason why I'm saying that is the Buddha taught within that environment. He didn't teach in this idealistic bubble where if we could only just, Rodney King, why can't we all just get along? The Buddha understood that unless there's something pathological, we all want to get along. We just don't know how to do it because we're stuck in these self-referential views. And that's why he taught his Dhamma. To do that, to that end. And he counseled most of the rulers of his time, and those that listened to the Buddha did not immediately end the strife within their little kingdom. In fact, they still engaged in war. But, and the Buddha understood that. But what he counseled them on is what to do when you win. How to treat people properly. Because he knew at that point in human history that wars and that type of thing were going to continue. But he was able to effect a great change in society. 250 years after the Buddha's passing, King Ashoka came across the Buddha's teaching. And King Ashoka was probably one of the most bloodthirsty rulers the world has ever seen from that time to this time. The notion that you that put their head on a pike, that came from King Ashoka. All over northern India and getting into southern India, there were heads on poles so the King Ashoka could tell people how powerful and bloodthirsty he was to scare people. He came across the Buddha's teaching, and it had such a powerful effect on the king that he never harmed another soul. In fact, going back that long, 2300 years ago, he started the first universal health care program. Anybody that was under his purview received free health care. Imagine that. We're still trying to figure out how to do it today. He went so far, there was still a lot of animal sacrifice even in his kingdom, that he offered free health care, free veterinary care for animals. The Dhamma affected him in such a powerful way. So it really is the way to develop the end of all strife in ourselves and in other people. That little reference to that got me going. Sorry about that. But thank you, Kevin. Greg, good to see you tonight. How's your practice going?
Okay. I'm just dealing with trying to keep myself from being distracted. I get distracted pretty easily. Things that are going on, you know. I think what I'm really here for is just to try to find some peace inside of myself, you know. Find a place where I'm calm.
Yeah, that what you're describing is the common problem. You know, it's not just you that has trouble with distraction. The reason why the Buddha taught meditation was primarily for that reason. The opposite or the antidote to distraction is concentration, but it takes some doing. And again, the Buddha didn't teach just to meditate to deepen concentration. He taught it as one factor of the Eightfold Path. We cannot continue views that aren't based on reality and expect to deepen our concentration very well. You know, that's right view versus wrong view, or skillful view versus unskillful view. If we have intentions that are contrary to deepening concentration, we're going to have a hard time with meditation. So he taught right intention. The entire Eightfold Path is there to support deepening meditation, deepening concentration. And concentration supports the ability to hold in mind, to be mindful of the other seven factors of the Eightfold Path. So I know you heard me say that last week too, and I'm just reinforcing that. It's not just meditation alone, but you're in the right place to deepen that concentration. So I'm glad you're here tonight. Kevin, good to see you.
Said at the beginning, you know, I've been very distracted and it's been hard to focus, but, you know, coming back to the Sangha, it's so much easier, better to, it just really helps me focus even more. So, the teaching of that Sutta just sort of, again, like so many of them, it just covers the whole Dhamma in a nutshell in a way. Yeah. He was able to do that repeatedly, I guess, over his lifetime to teach Sangha and to teach other people. So I'm glad to be able to participate in it.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. And when you have a broader understanding of what the Buddha taught, you can see how every sutta, in one way or another, really incorporates the entire Dhamma, doesn't it? And you can't be a truly compassionate person without understanding how to get there and how to express it in an appropriate way. It's interesting that the Buddha left a life of power where he could have had a direct and immediate influence on the world around him in a positive way. But he realized that just that type of power wasn't enough. He was lacking. He left the palace grounds because he wanted to understand the nature of aggression and competitiveness, the true nature of suffering. That's what he set out to understand. He wasn't looking for answers to the great questions of who am I, where am I coming from, and all the rest of that. Where do I go after I die? That didn't concern him. He wanted to understand the common problem of human suffering. And he figured it out. And the most amazing thing to me is, and the most fortunate thing, is that those teachings that were first presented 2,600 years ago are still available to us today, and in simple suttas like that. Thank you. Lily, welcome to our Sangha. How was your meditation?
Good. So, why did you meditate like this? It's nice to do this again.
Yeah.
I don't really know what to say. Do I have to say something?
You don't have to say anything.
Listen?
No, that's absolutely fine. Yeah, there's no pressure to say anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're all just glad that you're here tonight, and I hope you join us again. I think I mentioned to Greg last week that there's a recording of this meditation on my website, becoming-buddha.com, at crossrivermeditation.com, too. If you want to listen to them to guide your practice. And I hope you continue to join us, and you'll learn more about the broader framework of the Eightfold Path, and that's what I talk about each week.
I'm happy that you can come.
I'm glad you're here. So. And if you want, I send an email out Mondays and Thursdays describing what the classes will be about and if there's any other announcements. You can sign up for that online. The only announcement is that our fall retreat is coming up October 19th to the 22nd. You can sign up online for that. I think that's it. We conclude each class with something called meditation. It takes about 5 minutes. And I'll talk you into that too. So find your relaxed meditative posture and gently close your eyes and gently close your mouth. And again, take a moment to become aware of the sensation of breathing in your body and let that mindfulness of your breath cease any distracting thoughts to the past or to the future or that may have arisen from our talk tonight. And metta means goodwill or loving kindness. And metta is both an aspiration for those of us developing the Eightfold Path and an ongoing expression of an awakened, fully mature human being. And these are the Buddha's words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied. unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing, in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you for a wonderful class. Peace.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. I welcome your questions and comments. To contact me and for guided meditations and instructions, Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos, please visit becoming-buddha.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Peace.